Michael.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI.
Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. The harrowing and important documentary, Merchants of Doubt, is precisely the kind of movie a lot of people need to see, but won't. Instead, this insightful expose will probably only be seen by those who are predisposed to buying into its critical premise. Based on the acclaimed book of the same name, Merchants of Doubt gives an overview of the recent history of public relations spin doctors. These charlatans who claim to be experts are hired by powerful companies to spread doubt about critical science.
That's Radioactive Magazine. Tuesday, 6 p.m.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoog, your host. Glad to have you with us here on this Monday in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Glad to have you with us here on the program today. We have several interesting interviews to send your way. First of all, we're going to talk about the 57th season of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City, their final show of this season. It's called Tosca, and here with us to tell us all about it, a very well-known lady here in the community, Linda Audie Brand, is with us. She is the Director of Education and Community Engagement for the Lyric Opera, but hey, she's directed theater around town for years, directed the Christmas Carol for many years, directs opera here, and down in Arkansas in Eureka Springs. You've directed opera in Eureka. I remember you telling me
that's
that.
Right.
In that park down there in Eureka Springs. Yeah. Nice to have you with us again. Her husband, Robert Gibby Brand, is an actor around town. Very knowledgeable. She won't admit it. She probably gets tired of hearing all this information.
No.
Okay.
He's really good.
Well, it's good that you can say that as well. Michael Welch is with us as well. She is a member of the Children's Chorus. She plays the role of a shepherd boy. And you told me before the show that you have been on the stage before playing also a young male role. Pull the microphone up close to you. I should have told you that. And tell me all about your role as playing a boy at the opera.
At my age and my height, it's very hard for me to play a very young girl because of the way my voice has developed, because our voices are a lot different than boys. However, I can make my voice sound like a younger boy, which I don't know what that says about the female voice, but I'm able to do that. So that is what I do. Last year, I was just a part of the children's chorus, and you wouldn't have heard just me, but this year, you will be hearing me. You will not be seeing me. It's all a part of the illusion.
I'm not going to be seeing you.
You will see me at curtain. How is this? My role is an offstage role, and it is. It sets the scene for a very dark scene in the opera, and it's like a sunset, and you hear me offstage singing, and it's a. I like how it plays out in the. It's not a very vital role in terms of storyline, but it definitely is a good transition into Act Three.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
First time for you here.
Yes.
Glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
Of course. She mentioned she was part of the children's chorus.
Right.
And that's something that you wanted to talk about today.
I'd love to talk about
the Ginger Frost Honors Artist.
I do. I do indeed. We've got such an interesting. I call it the food chain at the Lyric for young people who are interested in opera. And if they are at all intrigued by this, we've got a great summer camp in the summers for 2 weeks. And then we also do a spring break camp, which we just finished up with. And that we teach them all about opera, and we teach them about whatever show might be using a children's chorus. In this case, it's Tosca, and indeed we have 20 young people on stage, main stage down at the Kauffman Center, getting ready to go on, and so they're very busy. And then Mike has been in a number of these before, but now she's also the shepherd boy, so she gets this great feature offstage role. top of Act 3, just like she was mentioning. She's also a member of our Ginger Frost High School Honors Artists. This is a really cool program. There's 10 honors artists, and they get free voice lessons throughout the school year, plus master classes, and then you're just buff and polishing, you know? It's a pretty amazing program, and it's so grateful to Ginger for her support for this for all these years.
Did they get a grant for this?
Some help from business community? Yeah, Ginger Frost has been our benefactress for, about 8 years now. And now that you mention it, we're looking forward to sort of diversifying. So, we would love to have other people who would be interested in helping with this help, but that's a whole nother story. and at the end of the year on May 12th, they'll do their spring recital at the Central Library. And so our 10 young artists will be singing at that too and kind of strutting their stuff and what they've learned over the year and probably the very pieces they took for state contests, for example. They get a lot of just polishing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the purpose, I guess, of a master class. You were part of this, Monica?
Yes, I've been a part of this now for 3 years.
Now, tell me how it all began. Did you audition for this? Did they pick you?
Yes. So basically, I came right before my sophomore year in high school, and my voice teacher had affiliated ties with the Lyric Opera, and she suggested that I go to opera camp, as well as my dentist, who was on the board of the education department. So they were both telling me about the program and how I should really go to summer camp. And so my parents and I were finally like, okay, I'll go. I was never super into opera prior, so it wasn't something that I was like super gung-ho about, but I like to try anything with music. So I went, and I participated in the in-house opera, children's opera that we do. I believe that year it was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs Spelling Bee. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. And at the end, they tell you that you have an opportunity to sing a song, and I'm always one for auditioning, so of course I sang a song, and I was accepted into the program, and it's pretty much as simple as that. You sign a contract basically saying that you will adhere to all of the requirements, which for what you get is nothing. To write a few essays and to attend their shows is obviously not a requirement for me. I would go anyways. But you write a few essays, you go to all your voice lessons, you keep up with your master classes, you attend state contests. If you make it that far, you at least try for it. You participate in as many things as you possibly can, because we are representatives of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. So pretty much just making sure that you know it's going to be a time commitment to a certain extent. So, yeah.
I'd love to know about some of the master class activity. Did they find something that... I'm sure you're very good, but did they find something where you were not quite as good, and then they work on that?
There's always something to improve upon, and I think that's something that a lot of people lose touch with. You always have something you can work on, even if you've worked on the song for years. Always something, even a new direction you can go in that you never thought of. So, especially with Linda taking over, we've done a lot more different types of master classes. Previously, we just kind of sang, and that was kind of it. But now there's more of a range, so we had one just purely on Italian diction. It was more of a class, but we each had our songs before us, and he would, Dr. Williams.
Yeah, Richard Williams.
Mm-hmm. And we really went in depth with that, and that was amazing. And then sometimes you just sing, and you focus clearly on the technique part, and then other times you focus on the acting parts of opera. So it's very versatile and all around the board.
Yeah, one of the... male singers in the opera told me one time that he never imagined singing opera, and then one of his voice teachers told him one time, you should try this. You have the right voice for it. Does that happen very often?
Yeah, it does. There's just a certain size and quality of voice that people are like, I wonder. You should maybe check this out. And it's pretty exciting when it happens.
Yeah, are they surprised at this? They may not have considered opera, but suddenly, you should try this, Barry. This, you have the kind of voice that could be developed.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And they're always, they told me that they were extremely surprised when that happens. But but that's only the ground floor. There's a lot of training that has to take place after that.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Like,
it's
how many
huge.
Years?
It's huge. And, you know, women's voices really become fully developed in their late 20s. But boy, guys, it'll take them till they're 32, 35, until everything is, you know, all grown up and put together. So it is a long-term project if you're going to be an opera singer. It's like being an athlete. It's going to be a long process.
Sure. Well, myself and other people that I have talked to, we always try to sing higher than what our natural voice will allow us to. And that doesn't come out so well. What would your advice be for someone who does that? Just try to stay down there in your own range?
Every voice is different, and you've got your sweet spot. It's just a matter of finding what your voice type really is and then making it the best, you know, the best you can possibly be.
The red sports car analogy?
Yes. Yes. I talk a lot about one of my baritone friends talks about going out on auditions. And he said, you can only be the best you can be. So he thinks when he goes on audition, I'm going to be the best red sports car I can possibly be. Now, if they're looking for a vintage yellow Volvo, I won't be what they're looking for. But all I can do is be the best red sports car I possibly can. It's just a great way to take some pressure off at auditions. You know, just think about, I have to be the best me I possibly can be. And then that's it. That's all you have control over.
Yeah.
And then they can pick you or not. But that's okay, because you did the best job you possibly could.
That's a wonderful philosophy, because I see people trying out for parts that they can't possibly do. But that's in their mind, that's what they wanted to do. But they'd have better luck if they auditioned for something else.
And you ought to just, you got to keep going. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And a lot of times just being seen makes people go, oh, I may not have something for you this time around, but gosh, you did a good job. And why not, tick, 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 we could do this show for you next year. So you just have to go try. And it's so much trust. Just trust that you're on the right path. Keep working. See what happens next.
When you train these young people, what is the thing they need to work on the most usually? I'm not picking on you now, Micah.
Oh.
Discounting Micah entirely.
No, but counting me entirely.
What is the thing that they most need help with? They have an untrained voice. You said that. How do you help them become trained?
There's every level of the package that has to be considered. Each one of them is going to be entirely different. Their voice teachers do a phenomenal job just working on excellent, excellent vocal technique that can frankly be used for any style. We don't know where their voices are going to take them. We don't know how they're going to develop. But we can put the best building blocks in place that they can use in any way that life takes them. So, and there's a discipline to that that will hold true for anything that they've tried to do. If they go into science or business or, you know, anything, that same sort of discipline is going to hold true no matter what they go into. Then there's the whole sort of literary and acting end of things, text analysis and acting technique, and that's where I can help them. And so we just put together your basic skills into the best package we can think to make them, and then get them out there. Get them into, you know, performance opportunities as best we can. With our little ones, it's so exciting to see, you know, the little biddies up there on the opera stage who have been into our opera camps or, you know, have just come and auditioned, and then we do training so that they can know exactly what they're saying. We've got to teach them, in Tosca, for example, here we are in Italian. Well, how do you tackle that? And so we do lots of music rehearsals. We do word-for-word text analysis. We make sure that they know what they're saying. We put all the pieces together in a really logical step, get the music all set, get it all memorized,
get up and run around, you know, figure out what it would be like to move and sing at the same time. Pretend that, you know, in this case, the sacristan is there, and where would you be looking and what would you be doing, so that when they get to rehearsal, they feel confident. They know how, they know the music, they know what they're saying, even if it's in a language they've never spoken before. They know the storyline, they know who their characters are, they're ready to be staged by whoever is going to be staging them. It's all just making sure they're super confident, and then they have a great time.
Yeah. Now, Mike, is in the show, you're one of these people. You mentioned Italian diction lessons earlier. Is that because, have you studied Italian in the past? You probably pick up a lot.
Yeah, I've picked up a lot over the years. Actually, the only language that I've ever seriously taken is Latin. I think I took it for about 6 years, which actually, because my high school doesn't offer Italian, has been a very big help, because they're so close that if I see a word in Italian, I'm most of the time able to, like, figure out what it means. But also just in singing things, you're able to pick up on a lot of language. Most of it is love language, but yes, I have learned, and I plan on studying in college, Italian and German and French.
Is your vocal part in Italian in this show?
Yes, it's in Italian.
Now, that's very difficult. It is for the adults. They tell me so. Has to be difficult for you as well. Not so bad, huh?
In the beginning, it was very hard, but Italian's kind of easy to pronounce once you kind of get the rhythm of the language. And once you get the rhythm of it, then you notice patterns and you start to see how things flow. It's very unlike English, where you could have one word pronounced one way and another word spelled very similarly pronounced a different way. So it's actually, I find it a little bit easier now. I don't think I would have said that maybe freshman year or sophomore year, but now I'm getting more into the hang of it, and I love the language. I'd like to become fluent in it.
Sure. We're speaking with Linda Audie Brandt, the Director of Education and Community Engagement for the Lyric, and Michael Welch. She's a member of the Children's Chorus. She plays the role of the shepherd boy. Listen to her talk about singing in Italian and all of that. We're talking about the show Tosca. It opens April 18th at 7:30 p.m. Performances continue Wednesday the 22nd at 7:30, Friday the 24th at 7:30, and Thursday, April 26th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Muriel Kaufman Center, at the Muriel Kaufman Theater in the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call, by the way, for more information is 816-471-7344, or this 800 number that you can call if you're out of the immediate Kansas City area, 1-800-OPERA-KC. And if you need numbers for that, it's 1-800-673-7252. Oh, and don't forget kcopera.org. You can also make arrangements online and get a lot of information online for all the Lyric activities as well. We're speaking with Linda and Michael. The show is Tosca. And who would like to talk a little bit about the basic storyline of Tosca?
Oh, pick me, pick me. Oh,
okay. Right. I pick Linda.
It was very hard.
It finally started to make sense to me. Last Thursday, we did a wonderful event at the Nelson. And I was thinking, how do I introduce this so it really cooks? There's this character named Angelotti. And he's like a political prisoner. And if you go back far enough, there's Marie Therese in Austria. And she had all of these kids. Five of them died, but the other 12 she tried to get married off into, you know, places so you'd never have to have a war. One of her daughters she married to the King of Naples, and the other she married to the King of France, as in Marie Antoinette. Well, that didn't work out so great. And there's Italy being all the city-states, and they just became the punching bag back and forth through the Napoleonic Wars of who's going to be in charge. So for a little while there, you had these seven different consuls who were setting up a French-led republic in Rome. Then the French troops left, and here comes the Austrians again. And then here comes Napoleon with the French troops again. So they've just gone back and forth. Now all of those consuls are in deep water. They've been thrown into the Castel Sant'Angelo. And here's where fiction picks up. Sardou wrote the play, that was then turned into the opera, and he took two people and merged them into one character that was, in fact, one of these consuls, and also hid in a well in a little secret area and ended up being killed. So he takes these two people, merges them into one, and he, the beginning of the opera is this poor guy racing into a little side chapel at the Church of San Andrea della Valle in Rome, trying to find the key that his sister has left him so he can get to their crypt, get some food, get some clothing, and escape, because otherwise he's going to be stuck in prison and rot.
Never a good thing in any era.
Nah, not so much. Now, unknown to him, a painter buddy of his named Cavaradossi has been in their side chapel. He has been commissioned to do a new painting. The Angelotti's sister has been in there praying hard, leaving the assorted costumes and things to help his escape. And the painter has been looking at her going, gosh, she's pretty. I'll base my painting on how she looks. So he's been doing this gorgeous Mary Magdalene painting. And he's actually of a revolutionary bent. He's one of, you know, the revolutionary guys, as opposed to the sacristan who comes in and has to like tend to cleaning his brushes and all this. And he's very much for the Austrian side of things, and also tied in with the Pope. So you get religion and war all mixed up in this wonderful mess. So here's the painter, and he's your lead tenor, and he's doing this gorgeous fresco of this gal who's blonde with blue eyes. Trouble is, his beloved is Floria Tosca, major opera star who has dark hair and dark eyes. She is very concerned when he takes too long to answer the door. Turns out he's met Angelotti, and he's getting him literally out of Dodge. And so she comes in all in a kerfuffle because who were you talking to? What's going on? What's going on? So he settles her down and says, honey, I've just got to work. Love you lots. Mean it. See you later. Bye. So they kiss and make up, and she goes. Then he leaves to go get Angelotti out of here, just in time for the cannon to go off. Angelotti, they know now at the prison that Angelotti's been, his absence has been noted. Oh dear. Here comes the baddie baritone, Scarpia. He's the chief of police, and he is one of the most terrifying characters in opera. He seems like he's such an upright sort of guy, but he's actually really scary. So he ends up playing on Tosca's jealousy. She comes back to say, oh, honey, I've got to sing this. I've got a gig tonight. I can't come to see you later. And who is there? Not Cavaradossi, but Scarpia. And he leads her down the garden path about how maybe there was somebody there, because we found this fan, which of course was part of the disguise for Angelotti, but she didn't know that. So she ends up leading them to Cavaradossi. He's captured. He's tortured. He's going to be executed, and the only way that she will be able to save him is to submit to the embrace of nasty old Scarpia.
Oh, sounds awful.
Dun, dun, dun!
Naturally.
It's big old melodrama, but you know melodramas make the best operas anyway, because you've got great, big emotions.
The arias in this are
amazing. Yeah.
Sitting in rehearsal is a dream come true.
Yeah. So it's a big ol'. I'm not going to tell you anymore. Oh. You've got to find out whether she succeeds or not.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
We can make a guess. We won't speculate.
It could go either way, right?
Yeah.
It really
could go either way. That's right. And in real life does go all these different directions. Is this exciting for you, Monica?
It's so exciting. I love the opera, and I love being in it. Most of the time, I will get to watch back from backstage on a monitor, so that's very exciting because the actresses and the actors and the chorus and the leads, they are amazing. I sat in on rehearsal a few days ago after my call time, and I just listened, and what they're able to do is just insane. And in the Kauffman Center, it will resonate so well. The voices in this production are through the roof.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I can tell.
You can't tell.
I can tell. We only have a couple of minutes left, Linda. You're the Director of Education and Community Engagement. Is there any other programs they have that you'd like to briefly mention?
Oh, if you want to get in on this whole food chain, come to Opera Camp. It's the last week of July, first week of August. We would love to have you. And all the information is on our website. You can sign up there. The second year, if you're into tech theater, because boy, opera takes every last thing. Mm-hmm. We also have a new program called Stages, and it's for every young technician who would be interested in design or paint, set design, costume design, wigs, makeup, any of that. That is the previous week, the last 2 weeks in July, and see what happens next. Oh, we've got another program called Words Plus Music. Mm. That's very cool. It's a collaboration between the Coterie and the composition folks over at UMKC. And we'll be strutting our stuff at the Coterie Showcase on the 17th of May.
Yes, 7 o'clock.
And May 12th is our Honors Artist Recital. We'd love people to come and hear our Honors Artists at the Public Library downtown up on the 5th floor in Hillsburg.
Yeah, and I'm sure all the information for this can be found on the Lyric Opera's website.
Yes, please.
kcopera.org. If we've interested you in attending or anything like that, the number to call is 816-471-7344. If you're out of the immediate Metropolitan Opera, and we know some of you listen way out in Kansas, some places, I know because I've been told, the number you can call out there is 1-800-OPERA-KC, and if you need to translate OPERA-KC to number 673-7252, it all kicks off on Saturday the 18th, opening night, 7:30 p.m. Performances continue on April 22nd at 7:30, Friday the 24th at 7:30, all culminating with a Sunday afternoon matinee on the 26th of April at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Ewan Kauffman Center for Performing Arts, the Muriel Kauffman side of the theater. There's two theaters. A lot of people don't know that there's two theaters over there. Mm-hmm. And this is the Muriel Kauffman side on the, well, it would be my left side or the west side, mm-hmm. if I'm not turned around mm-hmm. by the time
the
I
Broadway
get
in. Side.
On the Broadway. Yeah. Good way there to put go. It, Micah. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for being with us. The 57th season of the Lyric Opera closes with Tosca. It'll be opening, of course, April the 18th. I want to thank my guest, Linda Audie Brand, with us once again, the Director of Education and Community Engagement. She has directed theater all around town. She is at the Rep, at the Unicorn, for sure, other places as well. Thank you for being with us again. And Michael Welch, children's chorus member. She plays the shepherd boy. Don't get yourself typecast in boy roles.
Don't tell colleges.
Well, you're much too beautiful to continue playing boys.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for being with us. When we return after our break, puppet show, but not necessarily for children, but we'll clear that all up for you when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. The harrowing and important documentary Merchants of Doubt is precisely the kind of movie a lot of people need to see, but won't. Instead, this insightful exposé will probably only be seen by those who are predisposed to buying into its critical premise. Based on the acclaimed book of the same name, Merchants of Doubt gives an overview of the recent history of public relations spin doctors. These charlatans who claim to be experts are hired by powerful companies to spread doubt about critical science. Back in the day, tobacco companies waged a successful PR campaign by complaining that cigarettes weren't addictive and didn't cause cancer or heart disease. The industry knew otherwise, but used these snake oil salesmen to create enough doubt to allow them decades of additional profits. The same strategy is now being employed by oil, coal, and chemical companies to cast doubt on the science of climate change and on man's involvement in it. Powerful and sad, Merchants of Doubt shines the spotlight on those who unapologetically manipulate the media and the public for their own nefarious ends. Also opening this week, The Longest Ride is yet another romantic drama from the pen of prolific Nicholas Sparks. While We're Young stars Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts in a comic drama about a middle-aged couple who become energized by their friendship with a younger couple. Cut Bank is a suspense drama starring Liam Hemsworth and Billy Bob Thornton. Al Pacino plays an aging rock star in the independent release Danny Collins. A Tale of Winter is a French romantic drama from filmmaker Eric Rohmer. And Woman in Gold is a true story about a Jewish woman's attempt to recover family property stolen by the Nazis. Helen Mirren stars. And the 19th annual KC Film Fest runs April 15th through the 19th. Information is available at kcfilmfest.org. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Freeze Frame!
The god that holds you over the pit of hell, much as one holds a spider or some loathsome insect over the fire, abhors you and is dreadfully provoked. Tune in to Radioactive Magazine Tuesday at 6 p.m. to hear more from Jonathan Edwards, the American theologian from the 18th century, as Greg Schwartz and Bill Claus, two freethinkers, talk about killing for God. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesday, 6 p.m.
This week, the moral challenges of the Aid in Dying movement.
I don't think anywhere in the Judeo-Christian tradition will you find any permission or justification for taking one's own life.
The question is, should that view be imposed upon someone who doesn't subscribe to it?
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, host and producer of ArtSpeak Radio, inviting you to tune in to ArtSpeak Radio at our new time, Wednesday at noon to 1 p.m. That's right, from noon to 1 p.m. on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Yes, art's all over the place here on KKFI. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue. Glad to have you with us. We are going to move over to, we're going to go from the Lyric Opera to Mission, Kansas, where the Barn Players are presenting their show, Avenue Q. At first glance, if you see the ads and stuff like that, you're going to think, this is a puppet show for kids. And how wrong you would be.
So wrong.
Not that some older kids wouldn't enjoy it and get a kick out of it, but don't think that you can take your younger kids to see the show. It's mostly a puppet show for adults. And here to tell us all about that and fill in all the gaps, a guest I had just a few weeks ago. What is the rule as far as how often you can come?
I think it's just as good as people think I am, I'll come. Till then, I'll.
No, I had one lady that was involved with different things. She came 2 weeks in a row, so you don't have the record.
I'm coming for her. I'm going to be that.
Preston O'Phill is with us. He plays the role of Princeton. You last saw him in Catch Me If You Can, the Barn Players. That's when he appeared on my show in an interview where he had the role of the young ne'er-do-well who took people's identities and actually flew a plane and was a doctor and was in the operating room and had no qualifications whatsoever.
Yeah.
Is that indicative of your acting career?
That's my day-to-day copy. I do that.
Well, welcome back, Preston. Nice to have you with us again. Preston plays the role, as I said, of Princeton. He appeared in Tom Sawyer at Theater in the Park, Fiddler on the Roof at the J, that's the Jewish Community Center, and as I said, Catch Me If You Can at the Barn Players. Probably a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, a few.
We don't want to pad the resume too bad. Betsy Bledsoe is with us as well. She plays Kate Monster, a graduate of the University of Missouri I went there.
Yay.
At Michigan State University. And now, when you were down there, you appeared in The Fantastics,
mm-hmm.
Follies, Light in the Piazza.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I picked that one especially because I'm so good at saying piazza. Has appeared in several operas as well.
Yeah.
So you were probably very interested in hearing the Lyric Opera interview.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go see Tosca on Wednesday. So.
Oh, yeah. Was last seen in Pirates of Penzance. That was at which theater? Help me
out. That was Theater in the Park.
That was at Theater in the Park. That's mm-hmm. right. So welcome both of you again. This is a show with puppets. It features the puppets, but it has adult actors like yourselves in the show as well. How many adult people are operating, if operating is in fact the right word, how many puppets?
Ooh,
I think it's six puppets.
I think, yeah, there's like eight, six puppets, eight. But they're eight puppets?
Yeah,
Rod, Nikki.
Right. Mrs. T.
Mrs. T, Trekkie.
You, me.
Mm-hmm.
Bad idea. I think, yeah, eight.
Yeah, eight puppets.
Sure.
But, and then there's two people that play the second hand of some puppets.
Oh, okay.
So mm-hmm. they literally just have their right hand in a puppet. And they walk around, you know, right next to the person that's puppeting the head and the left hand. And they, so you have two people operating one puppet at one time.
Do the puppets have all the lines in the show? Do you interact with
them? Oh, yeah. Definitely interact. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are puppets and then there are humans as well. This is kind of set up like Sesame Street in the way that the puppets are people, but then there are like people. But hopefully it's so good that you can't tell the difference.
Oh.
Hey.
Right. So you will see the puppeteers puppeting at the same time as the puppet. You know, see them on stage. And the goal is so that, yes, you'll be looking at both of us at the beginning, but hopefully 20, 30 minutes into the show, you realize I've stopped looking at the person. I'm looking at the puppet.
Well, it's interesting when you see a ventriloquist on television. There was one mm-hmm. over the weekend that I saw, and the puppet was getting close-ups. I found that so humorous. Uh-huh. The puppet was getting close-ups, and the guy who was offering the puppet, he was in some of the shots, but not nearly as many as the puppet was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely been a challenge for the puppeting to make. I get notes all the time. Betsy, you did something really awesome with your head, but your puppet didn't do it. So make sure your puppet does it too, you know.
Both trying to be ventriloquist or?
No.
No.
Oh, no.
Okay.
That's been my dream since age five. No, not at all. Well, thankfully, I mean, with this show, it's been very hard, but we got trained by a Guy Gardner who is trained by Disney as a puppeteer. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to think we're trained by Disney too on just the strictness of the puppeteering because we each scene had to pass off on the scene. And if you messed up once, you didn't pass off. And it was just so strict. You had to get all the syllables. You had to get the believability. You had to get the movement. You had to get the hands. And it was just so much more than I thought I was getting into when I first auditioned.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like it's quite complicated. I know there's different kinds of puppets.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Are these mannequin puppets or are they different kinds of puppets?
Well, there's the double rod and then there's the hand. I think those are the two that
we
have.
Mm-hmm. Hand and double rod.
Yeah, I don't think hand's the technical term.
You have a puppet. So my right hand will be in the puppet operating the head. And then my left hand goes in like a sleeve. And that would be the puppet's left hand. And then you have a second person, like I was talking about, who puts their right hand in the other side of the puppet. I mean, and so so then the puppet has two hands, and it's being operated by two people.
Now, this is a strange question, but it'll make sense at the end. If you're the kind of performer that likes to gesture while they're talking in character, I guess your puppet only gestures on the side you're on then.
Right, yeah. You definitely have to collaborate with your second hand to make sure that, mm-hmm. you know, you're not doing the same gesture, or if you're doing clapping, some of them clap. Yeah. That's very interesting to do, and you have to clap with somebody else, you know.
It'd be kind of side and
right,
missing.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah. I mean, and they do a wonderful job. I think mm-hmm. Ethan and Kristen are doing fantastic at
they're the right hands.
They're our right hand, second hand puppeteers.
And for a mental image, think like Cookie Monster. That's the kind of hand, the right hand, left hand we're talking about, that kind mm-hmm. of build. But our right hands are just great.
Yeah, they are really good.
Now there's a story to the show, correct?
It is, yeah. Do you want to take that one for us?
Yeah, I'd love to. It starts off as my character, Princeton, moves down Avenue Q after graduating college with a BA in English, and he grew up on kind of the belief that we raise our children on, which is they're special and they can do anything they want in the world, and now he's in the real world, and it's kind of that, like, well, let's see what you got, buddy. Yeah, and yeah. He goes through Avenue Q, and he learns different lessons in a Sesame Street kind of sense of, like, different songs, where I'm afraid to say some of the titles, a little inappropriate.
I see.
But, like,
are they takeoffs on shows that the public would recognize? Are they having fun? Are they lampooning other shows?
No, it's basically just a satirical Sesame Street in a way.
Taking adult topics and putting them into a Sesame Street song format.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a song that my favorite song in the entire show is called Everyone's a Little Bit Racist. And, you know, recently we get up there and we sing it and we're happy and we're bobbing our heads and we're singing it, and it's in such a great style and fun, and it has such a great message, the song itself. In fact, I mean, I just recently, the head of the FBI was talking about, you know, with all of the social things happening right now in our in our country, the head of the FBI he quoted Avenue Q and said, you know, everyone's a little bit racist, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's my show.
I'm going to use that in an interview.
Yeah,
and you did.
No, I mean, that just came to me, but I mean, this is very pop culture. Every theater nerd knows these songs, and I hope they all come out to see it, because it's so exciting to watch, even if you're not doing it, so exciting to watch.
Yeah. I'll bet so. When you sing, Preston, do you sing as the puppet or as yourself, or both? Or both at the same time, which would be fun.
That would be fun. No, I do take on the puppet. Thankfully, it's not a huge difference in voice, so it's not too hard. But I know I play myself, and then I'm sorry, I play Princeton, and then I also voice another puppet while someone else is puppeteering. So you want to talk about?
That's tricky.
Yeah, that's difficult. So I'm on stage with Princeton talking to Kate Monster, while this other puppet's over on stage right doing his thing, and I'm voicing him. So that's kind of weird.
Well, it sounds more complicated than initially thought.
It's tricky.
Oh, yeah.
What was the hardest part? Learning. You told me before you didn't have any previous experience at doing puppets. So, well, you first, Betsy. What was the hardest thing to learn? The coordination of it all. I'm sure you got the lines down rather quick.
Well, I mean, and the premise is that my feet are my puppet's feet, and so I will admit I am not a dancer, but there's one move in one of the songs where we kind of do like a modified kick line, and my puppet is singing at the same time. So I'm moving my hand with the words, and I'm saying it, and my puppet's hands are going left and right, and my feet are kicking left and right, and I just realized that when my hands and feet are doing it, my mouth is not doing anything. So, like, my hands are not doing... I cannot... It's like doing five things at once. I could not figure it out. I still have trouble with it.
Well, you say you can't dance, but what do they expect? You know, the puppet's legs just are limp.
Well, actually, our puppets... I mean, it's hard to describe on radio, so you'll have to come out and see it. But our puppets don't have legs, so really it stops at a torso. You basically just get the torso on up of the puppet, and you know, so the premise is that my legs are the puppet's legs. You know, when I walk around, I do bounce my puppet up and down so that it looks like she's walking, but you know.
Yeah, and having a conversation with yourself that while humorous, that can't be easy.
Right. I think that the hardest part for me was you know, getting the puppet to look at the right thing. I think my puppet is looking at you in the eyes, but truth is, my puppet's actually looking over your shoulder, and so. But it makes a difference when you can get your puppet's gaze at the right thing. It makes a difference. It makes it really look like they're alive. So that's probably for me the hardest part, is making sure my puppet is looking exactly where it's supposed to be looking.
Yeah, eye contact with the other performers or the audience.
Right.
Whatever need be. What about you, Preston?
I would definitely say it would either be making the puppet seem alive, because you have to remember, it's not a living thing, but you, when you watch it, you want people to be like, oh God, that's not alive. Why am I so attached to it? Because you have to let it breathe, and you have to let it walk, and you have to have it talk and express emotion and stuff like that. And that was definitely difficult. The getting the synchronization of the words down took a lot of time, a lot of crazy nights in front of a mirror with a puppet by yourself. Mm-hmm. Or the puppet costume changes. I have 10. I have 10 costume changes.
He does have
changes.
A lot of costume changes, yeah.
It's just,
so you rush, in your case, Princeton, you rush him off stage and somebody changes him?
Or I change
him. Or you change him. Mm-hmm.
But I thankfully do have a nice team that changes them, and it's really, really nice of them.
It is nice. Thank you.
Thank you, Allie and Ethan.
Yeah, well, I hadn't considered the change of costumes for the puppets, but that would be important.
Yeah, it's magic.
You probably don't have any changes of costumes. There's probably no need.
I know.
We stick to a pretty strict gray scale. Pretty strict gray scale. Human costuming. For the puppeteers, we wear black or gray or something.
Is that
like
because
that.
Psychologically, I guess the playwright, I wasn't quite sure how to put it, the playwright wanted the audience to look at the puppets rather than to look at you.
Yeah, I mean, something I like about this show is that, what they've decided is that we're not going to just all be in black or like a black leotard or something like that. We're actually going, like, I'm going to try and be wearing a cute skirt. Like, my puppet, her occupation is a kindergarten teaching assistant. And so she's going to be wearing, like, black tights and a skirt and a blouse, and that's what I'm going to be wearing, but it's just going to be in like black and gray so that, you know, I mimic her, so that when you do look at me, if you look at me, you know, you're still getting Kate Monster.
Yeah, so. I guess that's the challenge. You know, the audience is probably going to be looking at the puppet more than they're looking at you.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. I really want them to look at the puppet. She's really cute.
Isn't it amazing how people, even if the performer and the puppet are having a conversation with someone, you'll notice that after a while they start looking at the puppet for their response rather than to you, and it's actually you they're having the conversation.
Yeah, you know, when we're on stage and, you know, we call like a pause or something, and, you know, I'll sit there with the girls that play Christmas Eve or Brian, and I'll have conversations with them as Kate Monster, and they'll talk to her, and we're just playing around, we're just messing around, improvising, but it's all, I'm just making Kate Monster do it. If I have the puppet on my hand, her mouth is going when my mouth is going.
Yeah, okay. And you gotta give kudos to the humans in the show. I mean,
they're doing great.
I have no idea how they're not looking at us in the eye, but I don't think they've slipped up at all in a really long time of like accidentally looking at the puppeteer. They're all just spot on to the puppet. That's really nice. So good on you guys.
In the Middle Ages, they had minstrel shows and puppets, and the reason for this, I ask, and the answer always was the puppets could say things that the performers couldn't say without getting into some kind of trouble. Now, I mean, if the king is going to lop off some heads, so to speak, it would be the puppet's head.
Correct.
Even though the performer was actually saying those things. Exactly. But since he was saying it as the puppet, it was accepted as usually sarcasm, something
right.
like that.
Right, yeah. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about that outside, of the puppets get away with a lot of stuff. Like, there is a scene in it where there was full puppet frontal nudity. Or full, what is that? Full
frontal puppet nudity.
That's right. I can't talk today. And
there's a joke I could say, but I can't say it.
Welcome to the radio. It's much funnier to have that as puppets, and you get away with the comedy side of that compared to if there were a
more awkward, you know, a more awkward side of it if it were people. You know, this show is really, it could not, you said this outside, it could not succeed if it were all played by people.
Yeah.
It is only the success that it is because, you know, it's done by puppets, half puppets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can say things, and this is true even in this day and age, they can say things that sometimes people can't say, but you let the puppets get away with it.
You have to. And, you know, we do have a lot of funny, funny moments, but I think the part that I love the most is when it's not the funny moment. It's the heartwarming moment. There's a scene with James Levy is one of our puppeteers. He's amazing hair. Amazing hair on that guy. And he puppeteers, and he actually brings you to tears.
He does. With a puppet. Every time.
Every time I watch him. I'm off stage.
It's a scene,
like,
it's a scene between puppet and human, and the moment between them is just so beautiful. You start to cry, and you're like, this puppet? It's a puppet. I can't believe it's puppet. A puppet. You know? And that is what... You know, so you'll go from busting up laughing to tears in this one show.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
We're speaking with Preston O'Phill, who plays the role of Princeton, and it sounds like assists on some other characters as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Betsy Bledsoe, who plays the role of Kate Monster, and probably others as well.
I mostly just do Kate.
Oh, okay.
Well, which is good, because I just get stick to the one voice.
In the Bard Players production of Avenue Q, opening, this Friday, April 17th at 7:30. Performances continue Saturday night and Sunday afternoon matinee. And that is essentially the schedule for the next 3 weeks. Plus, there is a Monday, the 27th, performance at 7:30 as well at the Barn Players of Mission, Kansas. The barn is located at 6219 Mart Way in Mission, Kansas. If you met MapQuest things, the zip code you need to know, 66202. Information can be had online at thebarnplayers.org. Speaking with Preston and Betsy, time is getting short for the opening. So, I don't know, what concerns you the most? The coordination? You probably got the lines down and all that. Dancing with your puppet, is that a concern?
Oh, no, not really. Just as long as I make sure that...
Which one leads, you or the puppet?
I think it's a mix.
It probably is. You're dancing with the puppet, yet it has to appear that the puppet is actually leading.
You know, I don't have the big dance scene, to be quite honest. The big dance scene is between the Rod and Nikki, who are kind of a play on Bert and Ernie, if I may. They get the big dance scene, so you'll have to come in, and that's two puppets dancing together.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty
big
crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
Hey, we're KKFI. We talk about everything here.
No, it's gonna be great.
It's really fun.
You see, puppets, animated characters. I've heard them called different things. Mm-hmm. They often can open avenues that other portions of the art can't really do.
Right.
And this would be one of them. You can have Bert and Ernie being a couple. I mean, I don't think I'm giving away any secrets that they don't want to know, but that was pretty well established.
Yeah.
But they could do that in that setting, and I don't think anyone was really offended by it. Not that I heard, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I know the creepy thing about the show is I've definitely developed, which is a great way to start a sentence about puppets.
Oh, I know. And the staff at the bar are thinking, he's going to say something's creepy.
No, I know I personally, and I know a couple other people who have developed kind of like a love for our puppets because we're spending so much time with these things.
Oh, well, people are known to be attached to this. Yeah, in one of Candace Bergen's books, she said that Charlie McCarthy had his own room at their house. So you'd walk by, look into Charlie's bedroom, and Charlie was always lying on the bed. Apparently, he didn't get up and play very much. He just lied around on the bed.
Yeah, I mean, we had rehearsal puppets for about two, three weeks. Yeah. And these puppets we were allowed to take home and work on them at home. And I had it at my my parents' house, and my niece came over, and she walked into the room, and I just talked like Kate Monster to her, and hello Julia, how are you? And I just talked like that, and after like 2 seconds, the kid just picked up on it and she just was like, you want to come play with me, Kate? Let's go play, you know. And that's what's cool, is you really do become quite attached to these these puppets. And when we had to, I really liked my rehearsal puppet. When I had to give it back, and I got my performance puppet, it was a little bit different, like, shape-wise, it was a little smaller, and I was like, it's
honey,
not the same.
We can always go to the store and buy you your own puppet.
I know. Christmas, Mom and Dad, Christmas.
There's a Christmas plug for you.
Any attachments for Preston?
The exact same story. I loved my rehearsal puppet. I take it home every single night, and I practice probably an hour to 3 hours every night, somewhere in there. I got weird intense with that, but I know I'd have friends come over, and they'd be like, oh, hey, let's go do something. And I'm like, oh, hang on. And I'd, like, have the puppet sitting in the corner. And they'd be like, that's kind of creepy that there's a puppet in the room. I'm like, yeah, I love it.
Well, you can see for yourself. The show opens this Friday, the 17th at 7:30 p.m. All the coordination with operating the puppet. Of course, there's also lights and music and songs. You have a music director?
Yes, Kevin.
Hirschberger.
Yes.
Yes.
Kevin. Does he have a puppet in the pit with him?
No.
It would only be right
I
if
know.
He did.
Yeah, to have a little puppet conducting us.
It would be funny. Kevin, do that. That's a new change. We're going to have you learn puppeteering.
Yep.
You can do it by this weekend, right?
You can make your arrangement at thebarnplayers.org. And the must be in the title because, as I've often said, there is more than one theater across this great land of ours called The Barn Players. Mm-hmm. So thebarnplayers.org. The barn is located at 6219 Martway, Mission, Kansas. If you have to have special arrangements made, and I'm thinking in terms of a handicapped problem, you want the theater to be expecting you or something of that nature, they do have a number for you to call, 913-432-9100. This phone is not manned all the time. It will take messages, so making your ticket arrangements at this number would be difficult. But you can go online at thebarnplayers.org or show up at the theater, 6219 Martway in Mission, Kansas. Mission Road is all... No, it's Johnson Drive. Johnson Drive is all repaired now, and they won't have any trouble navigating down and getting to the barn.
Yeah.
In time for opening night this Friday the 17th at 7:30 p.m. Sounds exciting for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's gonna be a blast. Yeah.
Just think how easy doing a normal performance will be after this.
I'm gonna miss it. I'm gonna miss the puppet.
It's gonna be weird. I know we
she likes to hide behind her puppet.
I guess maybe.
Yeah. Now, maybe the next time she comes on the show, maybe she'll be talking through her puppet, which would be interesting, and psychologists would find that interesting as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Can't be done. I want to thank my guest for being with us, Preston O'Phill, who plays the role of Preston, the puppet, and some other as well in the show. And Betsy Bledsoe, related to Bo, by any chance? No.
Okay. You've I've heard it a couple times, but no.
Great musician.
Mm-hmm,
really
I've
is.
Heard.
Betsy plays the role of Kate Monster. Mostly Kate Monster, she said, in the Barn Players production of Avenue Q. It's a puppet show, but for adults, not for children. I guess some of the humor wouldn't be appropriate for the children, I guess that would be. But it's a show about social commentary and current issues and things of that nature.
Yeah, definitely.
With a humorous tinge to it. Which would be interesting as well. Opening this Friday the 17th and for three consecutive weekends at the Barn Players of Mission, Kansas. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Jazz Insider is next. I saw him preparing for his program. He's out there. Jazz from 1 to 3. The Blues will then be with us from the Blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio.